come on in.
And now, back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
The kids love it.
And your host,
welcome to paradise,
Bill Frank.
Welcome back. I'm Bill Frank, and you're listening to the Bill Frank Show on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business and politics. Each of my guests will share his or her perspective on one of these topics. My next guest is a financial analyst in the healthcare field for the Pacific Research Institute. We'll discuss the possible outcomes of the Supreme Court's ruling on Obamacare and their impact on healthcare, the economy, and medicine. John R. Graham is the Director of Healthcare Studies at the Pacific Research Institute and Executive Director of the Benjamin Rush Society. John is a financial analyst who researches the effects of laws and regulations on the investments in the health sector. John received his MBA from the London Business School in England and his BA with honors in economics and commerce from the Royal Military College of Canada. John writes the monthly Health Policy Prescription series of analytical essays, and he contributes to PRI's Capital Ideas columns on public policy. He has written for periodicals including The Wall Street Journal and The Washington Post, joining us from Northern California. Hi, John. How are you today?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, wonderful to have you, and it couldn't be more timely because the U.S. Supreme Court is set to rule on Obamacare tomorrow or a week from tomorrow. And really, there are only three possibilities coming out of this. Either they're going to keep Obamacare intact, or they might strike down parts of Obamacare, like the mandate that all citizens have to buy health care, for instance, or the court will strike down all of Obamacare. In either of those three scenarios, there are going to be ripple effects for all of us living across the country and those of us living here in California. So I want to ask you to talk about each of the scenarios, if we can, please, looking at what might happen after the Supreme Court rules on Obamacare, starting with if they keep Obamacare intact, what happens?
Well, if they keep Obamacare intact, then all the businesses which invested in implementing Obamacare for the last couple of years will be confident in their investments, and they'll keep rolling on. Now, that's probably a good thing for those businesses. Whether it's a good thing for patients, I'm not so sure. Some people might have seen the details have emerged of the deal between the pharmaceutical industry and the White House when they passed this law. There's a lot of goodies in there for the various interest groups in healthcare that got put in there for the bill to get passed, and things will keep rolling along. Now, I sort of think of the Supreme Court decision, which will come out either tomorrow or a week from tomorrow, as one shoe of two shoes that are going to drop, the other shoe being the November election. Mm. So whatever the outcome is, it's going to energize certain parties for the election, and if they find Obamacare constitutional, that's really going to energize, I think, the conservative base and the Tea Party base and all that, and it's going to really cause the Republicans in the House and the Senate and the Romney campaign to really have to communicate effectively what they will do if they get elected and actually vote to repeal the thing in January 2013.
All right, John. Well, let me just challenge you there because, first of all, if Obamacare is not overturned, won't that be a feather in the cap of President Obama, who's right now sagging in the polls? His economic policies are floundering at best. If he gets Obamacare, he can at least stand on the platform that his one social issue that he wanted to get passed did get passed and is moving ahead.
But then you got to look at the polls. I mean, there's been a lot of polls out there ever since, for almost 3 years now. I mean, in 2009, they started polling Obamacare. The bill was signed in March 2010. Obamacare has never cracked 50% in the polls. So he's fighting a headwind. I mean, a lot of people would, and the polls today would like to, people don't quite understand. They want to get rid of some parts of Obamacare. Some of the stuff that sounds nice, they want to keep. But generally speaking, the bill is considered harmful by most people. So I think that if the Supreme Court finds it constitutional and say you can go ahead and implement this thing, I think it's going to give more energy to the opposition than to Team Obama.
All right. Well, that's fair enough. My guest is John Graham of the Pacific Research Institute. We're talking about Obamacare. The ruling from the Supreme Court is out either tomorrow or a week from tomorrow. John, let's continue on the harm that Obamacare might do if it's allowed to be enacted as it is today. Mm-hmm. And we take a look at that, the effect on small businesses. What is going to be the impact on the small and mid-sized businesses here in Ventura and Santa Barbara counties if this moves ahead?
Well, they're going to find it more difficult to acquire health insurance. I mean, it just in the last couple of years since some of the regulatory rules of Obamacare have been implemented, the major part of Obamacare kicks in January 2014, but there's already been some rules that have tightened up the regulation on health insurance and mandated more sort of government control of what's offered, and small businesses are already seeing that. In California overall, I think small businesses are going to be seeing about a 10% increase this year from some of the carriers, and that's mostly due to some of these things from Obamacare, some of them which are popular, you know. And one of the things that pulls very well is keeping kids up to age 26 on your parents' health insurance policy. Well, okay, that's fine, but you got to pay for that, and it doesn't come for free. So those costs will keep going up. One of the things in California is that a part of Obamacare is called the Health Benefits Exchange, and many small businesses will find it beneficial to dump their employee benefits and send their employees into this so-called Health Benefits Exchange, where I can't be certain what's going to happen, but I'm pretty sure there's going to be very, very limited choice of health plan. And it's going to look a lot like Medi-Cal, you know, a very limited kind of availability of access to care. And, you know, we'll see how it rolls out. But I think the there's a little bit of tax credits and stuff for small businesses, but certainly polling that I've seen from the NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business, shows that small businesses realize that the little pretty rinky-dink tax credits that they'll get are not going to compensate for the increased cost of the mandates in Obamacare.
Right, which brings me to a major point of the Obamacare package, and that is small and mid-sized businesses are actually incentivized to dump their employees into what you call the health benefits exchange.
Yeah.
My guest is John Graham from the Pacific Research Institute. We're talking about Obamacare. And John, in all of this discussion, you haven't even talked about Taxmageddon, which is one of the three legs of Taxmageddon, which happens at the end of this year, where all sorts of taxes will be levied upon United States citizens, I think totaling $434 billion, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
But part of that is the first round of Obamacare taxes will be implemented January 1st of 2013. So we won't have the benefits of Obamacare until 2014, but we're going to start paying for it in 2013. What effect is that going to have on consumer confidence, consumer spending, and small businesses?
Well, it's brutal. It's a double whammy. I mean, we already had the Bush tax cuts expiry baked in, and on top of that, we got the Obamacare tax hikes. And the one that that I'd like to single out is an excise tax on medical devices of 2.3%. So that's of the top line revenue of the medical device maker. And already, all around the country, all kinds of medical device makers have said this is a killer. We're going to lay people off. We're going to cut back our research and development budgets. This, an excise tax is quite remarkable. I mean, that puts medical devices, you know, pacemakers, MRI machines, in the same basket as cigarettes and alcohol. I mean, it's a breathtakingly idiotic way to finance health reform.
And like tobacco and alcohol, would it be regulated by the FDA?
Well, they are regulated by the FDA. They've always been regulated by the FDA, the medical devices. And that's something that's been around for many, many years. But the idea of laying an excise tax on so that of, you know, you have to add another 2.3% on every sale of a medical device. I mean, and that, you know, hospitals buy medical devices, individuals buy medical devices, doctors' offices buy medical devices, and that's going to be a real that's going to have a real negative impact. It's going to increase the cost of buying a medical device, obviously, and it's going to really harm employment and innovation in the medical device sector. So there's a lot of energy. Even some Democrats want to get rid of that. Democrats have voted for Obamacare. Senator Klobuchar and Senator Franken of Minnesota. Elizabeth Warren, who's running to unseat Scott Brown in Massachusetts for the U.S. Senate. Those are states where you've got medical device makers. Medtronic is in Minnesota, and there's many of them in Massachusetts. They know that this is a job killer. And so, you know, this Taxmageddon is absolutely going to be astonishing. And I think you brought up a very important point. What people have to understand is the media really fall for this idea of how the Congressional Budget Office scores various bills and entitlements. And the Congressional Budget Office is mandated to score things over a 10-year period. And things are supposed to be deficit neutral under the PAYGO rules. This is probably getting a little geeky for your audience, but so that's why they front-end loaded the taxes and back-end loaded the benefits. So over the 10-year period, you know, they passed the bill in March 2010, so the 10-year period ends on December 31, 2019. It looked deficit neutral because the revenues were front-end loaded and the benefits were back-end loaded, and it was a pretty a pretty devious way of getting the media to report that Obamacare legislation is deficit neutral.
Well, you're right. It is a little bit geeky, but the point well made, John. And the other thing that people need to realize is the CBO is notoriously basing this on very high estimates of what our GDP is going to be.
Yeah.
My guest is John Graham. We're talking from the Pacific Research Institute. We're talking about Obamacare. So that's what happens if Obamacare moves through as it is today.
Yeah.
It's up in the air as to whether that will happen or not. More likely than not, part of Obamacare may get struck down, the mandate that everyone must buy insurance. That runs anathema to our constitutional rights, many people believe, and that is perhaps the most likely to be singled out and eliminated. What happens if that component is singled out? Does it gut Obamacare?
Well, it yes and no, in the sense that the actual revenues from the penalty or individual mandate were not a huge part of Obamacare. The other parts of this tax-mageddon were much bigger revenue sources. But the problem is, under Obamacare, it says an insurer has to give health insurance to anybody at the same rate, you know, within a certain age. So every 50-year-old is supposed to get it at the same rate, no matter what your health status is. Well, that's like saying if you've already crashed your car, you get to pay the same premium for your auto insurance as someone who's a safe driver. You know, whatever the sort of morality of it is, charging different premiums to people of different health status, you know, you can't just allow people to do that without being penalized if they don't maintain continuous enrollment. So this is what people fear is a death spiral of health insurance. And most economists who looked at it will say, yeah, if you don't have the individual mandate, but you have this what we call guaranteed issue, you know, people can wait till they get sick to get health insurance, and obviously that can't work out. So the bill has to be revisited, and so whoever wins the November 2012 elections, it's kind of like we open up a can of worms and we have to pick them up one at a time and put them back into the can. And what we also have to wait for is the administration said, look, they made the argument kind of like I've made. And the health insurance industry made the argument that I've made is that you can't have one without the other. So if you pull out the individual mandate for constitutional reasons, there are other parts of the bill that have to come out. And what we don't know is the Supreme Court going to just say, okay, we think the individual mandate is unconstitutional, and the rest of it, we don't know what the heck, you know, you guys have to deal with it. Or will they say, okay, we see where the individual mandate is necessary for other bits and pieces of the bill to function, so we're going to strike that down as well, and we don't know what they're going to do there until they actually come out with their decision. So that is, I think you've hit the nail on that. That is the most likely outcome. It's also the outcome that we don't really know what that means. So I'm looking for massive confusion in the second half of this month and as we go through the summer, as me and all kinds of other experts try and pick through the entrails of this decision and figure out what has to happen next.
My guest is entrail picker John Graham, who is from the Pacific Research Institute. We're talking about Obamacare. The third scenario, John, of course, is that the Supreme Court strikes down all of Obamacare. We are essentially back to where we started then, if that is the case.
Yeah.
But where does that leave the healthcare industry after all of this 2.5-year hoopla of Obamacare?
Yeah. Well, it leaves them very frustrated because they've invested 2 years in reconfiguring their business processes. There's been some big deals happen. WellPoint, which is a large health insurer, bought 1-800-CONTACTS, which is a mail-order contact lens provider. I mean, that's because of Obamacare. There's been a lot of hospital mergers. There's been a lot of hospitals buying up physician practices. This is because Obamacare gives a lot of handout subsidies to things called accountable care organizations, which are basically, you know, effectively local monopolies of hospitals and doctors. And so all that kind of has to get unwound. But again, it won't get unwound in the short term, because if they do find the whole thing unconstitutional, immediately we all look to the Republicans and the Democrats, we look to Obama and we look to Romney, and we say, all right, we're now, you know, 4 months or 5 months out from an election. What do you do now, guys? What's your answer now? And it'll be very interesting to see how they rebuild the thing. Obviously, the Republicans will say, look, I told you so. And they'll reach into their back pocket and bring out whatever they think the right reforms are. And what Obama and his team do, I really have no idea. They will probably come back. Well, there's a likelihood they'll come back and say, you know what, there's a significant body of our supporters would like a single-payer system that's financed by more taxes, and maybe that's what we'll put in. to fix Obamacare. Hmm. But there's definitely going to be a lot of pressure put on the candidates to talk their way around this and figure out what the heck to do next.
All bets are off if the Supreme Court strikes it down. My guest is John Graham. So, John, I want to shift gears here, and I don't want to get too wonky, but this is an important point that many conservatives are thinking, and that is conservatives have always espoused that interstate purchase of health care as a replacement for Obamacare, meaning that here we are in California, we've got very high rates here, but, you know, Rhode Island might have very low rates, or Montana probably does have very low rates. I'd rather buy my insurance from Montana. In fact, Georgia has enacted a law that's very similar to that. Arizona may follow Georgia's lead pretty soon. You don't believe it's the answer, however. It's not the magic bullet. First of all, why don't you believe it? And then explain what would be a better solution.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I get in a lot of trouble when I talk to my friends about this, because the primary driver of health costs, of health insurance premiums, are the health costs.
Mm-hmm.
So the lowest health insurance you'll find is in Idaho or Utah. But if you're living in Miami, you know, the Idaho carriers are pricing based on the cost of care in Idaho. And if they were going to sell a policy in Miami, well, they would have to get a network of Miami hospitals and doctors, and it would automatically become more expensive. And I think it kind of, you know, I'm not against it. The Georgia law has happened, but, you know, when I talk to the proponents of this idea, I say, okay, well, what Idaho health insurer or Utah health insurer is selling policies in Georgia? And none are. I mean, it's not taking advantage of it, I think, because of the problem I mentioned. And I think it's far more important to focus on the real problem of health insurance, is that you can't decide where to buy your health insurance. I can't. My employer decides where I get my health insurance and what health insurance I have. And that is something that we've had since World War II in this country, because the tax code says if you get your health insurance from your employer, it's a non-taxable benefit. But if you're an employee who earns a wage or a salary and you were to go buy your own health insurance, you'd be using after-tax dollars. Well, that's absurd. I mean, imagine if I said to you the solution to the housing crisis was that we get rid of the individual mortgage interest tax deduction and we made your house a non-taxable benefit if your employer gave it to you. And so every time you changed jobs, you had to change your house. Some human resource manager at your employer decide what house you can live in. And next year they might change their mind and contract with another housing organization, let's call it an HMO, a housing maintenance organization, and your employer could say, you know what, we're moving our employees to another development. I mean, that would be insane, right?
Right,
and
exactly.
Yet that's the way we get our health care. And then we wonder why there's so much bureaucracy and so much lack of individual control and consumer direction. So what we've always advocated on our side is that the tax benefit, be it a tax credit or a tax deduction, each of those has advantages and disadvantages. Give that to the individual, and the individual decides what health insurance he wants, and he can renew it for as long as he wants, and he doesn't. It's not up to his employer to decide. And, you know, that's the way we do health insurance. That's the way we do that's the way we do auto insurance and homeowners insurance, and we don't have presidential candidates going around saying we have to fix that system, because it works pretty well.
Mm.
And the other thing, I'm sure you've heard this before, but we can never say it too often, is that the more your health insurance covers, the more expensive your premium's going to be, and the more bureaucracy there's going to be in the system. I mean, my auto insurance, I haven't put in a claim in auto insurance since 1985,
wow,
the last time I had an accident. Well, there's all kinds of health care transactions in your normal life with your primary care doctor, with your pediatrician, with your internal medical specialist that no insurance company should be involved in. You know, for an ordinary person of good health, the insurance should cover catastrophic illness. But when you get...
And
excuse me.
Sure. Clear your throat, because we're going to have to end it there, John, I'm afraid. Unfortunately, we just run out of time. You are a wealth of knowledge
on
this.
I was babbling on.
No, that's all right. Well, you're a wealth of knowledge on this subject. If people do want to learn more, and they want to learn more about your writings and so forth, where would you direct them to go?
Well, we have a website called pacificresearch.org.
PacificResearch.org, and you can find all of John's writing there. John, it has been a delight, very illuminating. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll be back with my next guest after ABC News at the top of the hour. Stay tuned for the second hour of The Bill Frank Show, coming up right after ABC News.